listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be, ladies and gentlemen, September 5th, 2013.
Yes, you say it like it's historic. Is it historic? Well, does it have some sort of meaning?
We're kind of climbing into the last quarter of what will become soon 200 shows.
200 shows? Really? Yeah, 200 shows. 200 shows of staring across the table at you. It's been magical. It really has.
I'm sure it has. I'm all a tither. So sincere.
I'm all a tither. And it's hot, too.
Tither?
It's hot. I know we say that, but I didn't think after last week I would want to bring up the fact that it's hot again. And this is how hot it is, Michael.
How hot is it?
I'm a 49-year-old male, and I'm actually considering the virtues of a parasol. That's how hot it is. I was thinking about actually using. I saw a woman with a parasol. I'm like, you know, that's kind of a valid point. I'm just watching that. Very hot.
That's a good picture. I like that. Picture.
Me with a parasol?
With a parasol?
Yes.
Yeah.
With this nose and a parasol,
you're in
I'd
the right
look
part
like
of
a
the city at my work.
I'd look like a bird of prey.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well,
let's thank the sponsors that introduce our guests.
We have a jam-packed
guests,
show today,
yes, we do.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, we
so we're going to get right to it. Mm-hmm. And first, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar, which we don't even have time for this week because we have so many people.
But don't prevent yourself from going to live arts, PerformingArtsLive.com, ladies and gentlemen, because they have it all. They have know all of everything about happening.
All in one
what's
place.
Happening in Southern California.
Yes. Sifts
in the arts.
Surfs the web for you.
That's right.
That should be their tagline. On State of the Arts today, we have four guests, three of which are associated with the same exciting project. That's right. Adventure and Redemption are at the heart of The Burnt Part, a West Coast musical premiere opening September 14th at the 3rd Street Theater in West Hollywood adjacent. West Hollywood adjacent.
Yes.
It's a new term.
Yes. Well, I just kind of thought
you coined
of that,
that
today. I did.
You coined
well,
that.
I don't
West
know if
Hollywood
I coined
adjacent.
It, but
the production is presented by the prestigious West Coast Ensemble Theater Company and is a coming-of-age story with music by Chris Miller, lyrics by Nathan Tyson, and please, anyone correct me if I get any of these wrong, Nathan Tyson, a book by Mariana Elder, and musical direction by the award-winning Gregory Neighbors. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to forgo Gregory Neighbors, which is what you have here. Gregory.
Oh,
Neighbors.
Yes.
Well,
you
have him
one
as
of those days. It's
Gregory.
Too hot outside.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
And add to that, Paul, the man who shepherds a story that follows a group of teenagers in West Virginia's coal country on a life-altering journey. And we have our first guest of the day. Via telephone, please welcome one of the hottest directors in Los Angeles regional musical theater, the oh-so-uber creative Mr. Richard Israel.
Hey,
he's
guys.
Back. He's here. He's uber. He's
here.
Richard.
I'm Uber, yes.
Uber, and he's dressed for it, so, you know.
Richard, we're so sorry that we can't have you in the studio today, but one more person and we'd need a shoehorn, so we full. But
it's probably best.
It's always nice to talk to you, and since you are the director, probably the best first question is for you. Can you give our listeners sort of a breakdown of the synopsis of the show without A, giving too much away, and B, still making them want to buy tickets?
Hopefully I can do all of those things. The show revolves around, takes place in 1962 in West Virginia, in the coal country of West Virginia, and it follows a group of kids who are sort of on a quest to honor the place where their fathers were killed in a mining accident 10 years prior.
Oh, wow.
And it's, it's, that being said, there's a certain joyfulness to the show. It's really not as much of a downer as it sounds. Dead dads aren't, the stuff that great times are made of, but it really, there's a certain, just a joyful sort of aspirational quality to the show. The music is stunning and not really like anything that you hear much. Yeah, it's just a journey. It's sort of a coming of age story about these kids, and it kind of treats relationships between brothers and relationships between kids and their dads, and what does it mean to honor a legacy, and but it does it in this very, very lovely, joyful, fun way. So it's hard to characterize because it's sort of not like anything that I've ever had my hands on.
Oh, wow. No, Richard, and you are such a accomplished director. You've done so much in town. I'm always curious because you pretty much pick your projects. And what was it that spoke to you personally about this piece of work?
It's a massive challenge.
Yeah.
And it covers a lot of territory geographically and emotionally. And there are things that occur in the storytelling that it's very challenging to figure out, well, how do I tell that story in a 99-seat theater?
Right.
And that stuff, I kind of dig that stuff because it really is, it forces you to get super, super creative. And,
well, it sort of distills it down to its essence, you know?
It does. And that's the thing, is that there's a lot of the stuff I do, it just doesn't have a lot of flash and bang to it, because I'm just not... I'm more attracted to stuff that you have to boil it down to its very core, and you have to really get down to what is this about and how are we changing the audience. And I don't have hydraulics to do that storytelling.
Right.
And I love that, and it's the bulk of what I do.
Well, you're also a master at it, quite frankly, and you know that. You know how I feel about you, Richard. You take something. You just said something that was interesting too. The challenge of putting something into a 99-seat theater, which is a lovely theater over there at the 3rd Street Theater. And
in West Hollywood adjacent, I might add.
In West Hollywood adjacent, yes. You do it so well, and it feels big what you're doing. So I think that that's an accomplishment in itself when you can put across something like that. You know, sometimes you go into a 99-seater and the production is small because the theater is small and you just don't get that sense of largeness. So kudos to you.
And thank you very
exciting.
Much.
You're Appreciate very
that.
Welcome.
Well, that's one of the things about... Richard, what was it that you were... Do you remember what you were speaking about when you were here last, the show that you had directed that you were promoting last time you were on the air with us? I know you do so many that you might not be able to recall it. We've coming up on 200 shows.
Having It All, Gypsy...
It's been since Gypsy. It might have been Once Upon a Mattress for Cabrillo.
Yes,
It was Avenue Q. It was Avenue Q for Doma. That was
right.
The last thing that I chatted with you guys about.
Which was also a small. Which one of those was in it? Cabrillo's not small, obviously.
No, Avenue Q was at the Met Theater.
Right.
For Doma,
okay.
And though the theater itself is not necessarily small, it still is an Equity Waiver Theater.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
But
you bet.
It's has a large. Performance space, so you do feel a little differently.
What is the instrument with a small venue like this, Richard? What is the instrumentation? How many pieces do you have?
We've got four, but we found the impossible, which is we found a drummer who also plays the viola, which I'm
wow.
told
wow.
It's like they don't really have those.
you can order them online, but they come in from
really,
Europe and they take forever.
It's a massively special order, and the shipping is crazy. but we have four people in the pit, but we've got, I want to say, seven instruments, because we've got a guitar player who also is playing the banjo. We've got a violin, we've got a viola, we've got percussion, we've got acoustic piano. So I think it's actually six instruments and four players.
Hey, you know, like, it's not the number of people, it's the instrumentation. I always use Buddy Holly and the Crickets as an example. Three guys, and you listen to those songs, and it sounds like he's got a whole little band with him.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Really
Now, this sounds good. We should throw the information out there to let people know how to get tickets for this, which I have
Absolutely.
Here at the ready, Michael, unless
yep.
you want to throw it out
well,
there.
Well, folks, previews begin September 7th, go through the 13th, performances September 14th through October 20th. Thursdays at 8 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., Saturdays 8 p.m., and Sundays at 2 p.m. Where? At the 3rd Street Theater, as I said, one of the loveliest Equity Waiver Theaters in town, 8115 West 3rd Street, Los Angeles, California, otherwise AKA West Hollywood adjacent. And you simply get your tickets by going to the website of 3rd Street Theater, and that's spelled with an R-E at the end, 3rd Street Theater.
The affected British spelling.
Yes.
Yes.
Should I say it that way?
Yeah, say it that way, Michael.
3rd Street Theater.
3rd Street Theater, yes, thank you.
.org.
.org.
Yes, and or simply call 323-655-9232. And tickets are quite affordable, I might add. So if you have an adult ticket and you, children 16 and under, $15 with the purchase of an adult ticket, use the promo code KIDS.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that actually begs a question. What is, Richard, in your opinion, what is a good age group for this? Like how, you know, some people, nothing irritates me more than when I go to a show and you're doing something that is a little racy and the people in the front row with a babe in swaddling clothes is wondering why. My 2-year-old didn't understand the incestuous sub themes. And so what is the good age group for this?
Well, the good news is no incestuous sub-themes that I'm aware of.
I haven't reviewed it yet, Richard.
This is from a man who's in a maid's outfit. Yes.
I would say that it's perfectly safe for any age. I would imagine that if you're going to, trundle your 4-year-old down there, they're probably not going to have the best time.
Yeah, you don't
just because it's a show that you have to sit forward into and listen to. But there's nothing inappropriate for a kid of any age.
Okay, good to know. I also want to say something else about the website for people. Whenever I see this, I always like to point this out to people. It's thirdstreettheater.org, but the T is not shared between street and theater. There's two T's in there. So many people, I had a website where that happened, where it was two letters side by side, mm-hmm. Whether it was the same letter. And I kept getting these people just like, oh, I can't get through, because it's Third Street Theater. Don't just share the T at the end of one and the beginning of the other. Do I sound a little too irritated about that?
Yeah. You sound angry.
I do. I've had 9 green teas, so maybe that's it.
It's a therapy session.
9 glasses of iced green tea, so that's where I am. Richard, always a pleasure to talk to you. We're just delighted to have you on the air. We have our other guests for the same show sort
of
chomping at the bit here. So we're going to move on to them, but we're very grateful to have you with us, Richard, and thank you so much. And if you're at the helm, I'm guarantee it's a very, very exciting show.
I appreciate that so much. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Richard, we'll see you soon.
Bye, Richard.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Nice guy.
He is a lovely man and truly talented. That's not lip service. He really is one of the most exciting directors, I think, on the up-and-coming of directors in Los Angeles, and it's always, you can always count on seeing a good show if he has something to do with it. So,
yeah,
make it a point, folks. Get yourselves out to the theater. That's the most important thing that we can always say to you, and always will say to you.
Very much.
Yes.
Very much. Really enjoyed it. So, who do we have now, Michael? Is that me or you?
That would be myself.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be.
Let's introduce give our in-studio guests here
Absolutely.
All that they are due.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is not only the youngest recipient of a Los Angeles Theater Ovation Award for Best Featured Actress in a Play, but the only female co-star of The Burnt Part. She comes armed with an impressive resume of theater credits and recently made her directing debut assisting with The Gift at the prestigious Geffen Playhouse in Westwood, California. Give it up for Lauren Patton.
Lauren. Thank you. Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Thank you for traveling into the hell mouth that is the Valley for your interview today.
It's a little hot out.
Are you not from the SFV?
I am all the way east. It's very far in Silver Lake. It was definitely a 30-minute drive, so it was a trek.
30-minute drive from Silver Lake must have been just bad traffic, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's LA, so it's expected.
Did you take the freeway?
I did.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
It's so exciting, but it was at least 15 degrees hotter.
Yeah. Well, it happens out here in the SFV, as I said.
Because, the SFV.
I wouldn't know if it's 15 degrees, but 10 degrees for sure.
At least, yeah.
And you have no other reason to come out here except for this show?
Just for this show.
Really?
That's
so sad. That really is sad.
Nothing
ever.
Oh,
please. I'm very happy here. There's nothing for me to do at SFV. I stay on the east side.
So let's talk about you and your career. Let's talk about, first of all, whatever made you become an actress or want to become an actress and a singer and be involved in the arts?
That's a hard question to answer because I honestly just don't remember a time not wanting to. Mm-hmm. I was one of those really weird children that just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I'm just very fortunate. I have very supportive parents, great family.
What was the influence, though? Where were you drawing that from?
Honestly, my family is not actors. Uh-huh. Nobody's in the arts. So I can't really say. My family would go to theater every once in a while when I was young. But It was just something that I always wanted to do, I suppose. And like I said, with supportive parents, I was able to get into community theater right away. And I've just been doing it from the time I was a kid.
Well, winning an award such as you did at 16, and you can't be that much older now.
So. I have to correct you. It was only a nomination. I can't take the credit.
Oh, really?
I didn't actually win. No, I was nominated for it.
Just tell him you won. Just tell him you won.
I know. I can't do it. I can't. It was very flattering to hear you say that, but it's just not true. Look, but yes, I was 16.
You know,
when I was
that is my mistake, and you were right.
No, it's fine. It's
you were
fine.
Right.
But I was 16. I was actually I got the nominations came out on my 16th birthday, so it was a good birthday present.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that was 5 years ago now. Yeah.
I'm sorry about speaking of mistakes, Michael. I made one as well because it's written one way, one place, and I'm looking at the press release. I don't even have the name of the show right. It's The Burnt Part Boys.
I just said The
Burnt Part, which brings to mind all sorts of other types of topics that the show could be about.
That's right.
The invisible parentheses under that is The Burnt Part Boys, parentheses, and One Girl.
And One Girl. Okay. Yeah. That's
something.
You
just don't see it.
It was in your billing that you had that requested?
Yes, it was in the contract.
Okay. Yes, The Burnt Part Boys is the name of the show, not The Burnt Part. And I will throw that, obviously, the ticket information again out a couple more times.
Yes,
I just want to make sure
again,
I got that
right.
I
apologize because no vodka martinis for me before writing.
I tell you, Michael, you can't do the Bloody Marys that early. I keep telling you, at least wait till 10, you know?
Yeah, maybe just one. Just one.
Well, it's one, but you know what that reminds me of?
Two for this, but usually one.
There's a great line from
wait till you get home.
Elaine Stritch,
yes.
Live at the Liberty. She has a great line about, my sister and I decided that we weren't going to stop drinking, but we were just going to have one drink a day. The next day, we bumped into each other in the vase section of Tiffany's. Lauren, can you tell us about your? I mean, you're about your. Aside from being the one female, can you tell us about your character and sort of the journey that she takes? I had to pop out and fix a technical issue here, so I didn't miss anything, did I?
No,
that front?
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
We're just talking about you, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just that magnetic.
Good, that's
yeah.
Good thing.
Lauren.
Of course. So Frances. Frances is my character, and she's a tough girl. She's a tough cookie. When you first meet her in the show, she actually ran away from the town in West Virginia and has been living in the woods by herself, a 14-year-old girl, for 3 months. So she doesn't quite fit in with the society of Pickaway, West Virginia. Doesn't really work for her. And of course, like Richard said, there's the relationships with the dads that they lost 10 years before the show begins, and I think that that's something that she's dealing with a lot. And so she ran off and is in the woods by herself, but then as they're going on this journey to the mine, they come across Frances, and she sort of picks up and goes with them on this journey. And she's just a really, I love her. She's a great, she's so cool because she puts out a lot and she's very tough and she doesn't want anybody to see underneath her.
No, Michael is jumping on the if she puts out a lot comment.
Oh,
yes. Bob, I would a little levity.
But she has a lot of bravado, but underneath she really is. She's a 14-year-old girl trying to figure things out, and it's great.
You know what's so intriguing about what you're describing and what Richard described earlier is that there really seems to be a tremendous depth of character here with these people. Mm. And the reason that that's so nice to see is because so much of the time when you see theatrical pieces or films that revolve around people in poor white Appalachia and West Virginia, there are so many stereotypes about that group of people. And the people just stamp whatever the slur du jour is about that group of Americans. And it's really nice to hear that these characters sound, I haven't seen the show yet, but they sound to be, they seem to be drawn very richly, and the depth of character seems really, really thorough. So it sounds very exciting.
Absolutely. You know? It's one of my favorite parts about the show is when I first read the script, every single character has a beautiful arc, and they grow so much from beginning to end in the piece, and it's so beautiful to see that fleshed out for every character, not just a couple, and then a few get left by the wayside.
That's true, because a lot of times you see the focus put on the main characters, and everyone
else
sort of feeds their story, and they're not as richly drawn.
Truly nobody's secondary in the show. It is such...
How big is the cast?
It's nine people. Nine people, yeah. And I don't think...
Not big for a musical.
No, not very big. And
actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's a great size, and we're blessed with a beautiful cast, and we all get along so well. It's been very fortunate. But honestly...
Is the rest of the cast put out?
Yes, they put out a lot.
Actually, yeah.
Actually.
That's going to be your one chime in. That's going to be your one chime into the conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, but we are, I feel like it's very lucky to be able to work on a show like that where it is, the most truly ensemble piece that I've ever worked on.
Really?
And that's what makes it so great, I think, rather than... Whenever I see shows where I feel like I wanted to know more about a character and it was just dropped, it's always such a disappointment, and that doesn't happen with this show.
Forgive me.
By comparison now, what you just talked about and your zest for being an actress and feeling a very particular way about this company, how do you liken that to your experience with Maria Atkin and The Gift at the Guest at the Geffen and making your debut as a director's assistant.
Yeah, that was amazing. I started my year out for 2013 doing that, and Mariah is an incredible director. She comes from London. A lot of people would know her work. She did the 39 Steps, the one that went to New York and is still in London now, that original production. She did Man and Boy with Frank Langella on Broadway, and I had never really considered directing. I always thought, like, oh gosh, it's so much to be an actor. I don't know if I could handle a whole production. That's too much. And I never thought it'd be something I'd do. And working on that with her, and also at the Geffen, which is such a lovely theater that has the resources and the ability to bring amazing actors to the stage and amazing playwrights like Joanna Murray Smith, who wrote The Gift, but also they care so much about LA theater. Right. And sometimes you think with, you know, working on an equity waiver theater, you think, oh, those big theaters, maybe it's more about money or something. And that's not at the Geffen. They really do. They love their theater community. They're great. Well, and coming out of that show, I now saw another door open for me. And I hope that that's something that I can continue to do in my career. And
so you actually participated in the direction of the show?
Yes. Mariah took me under her wing, really, and kind of challenged me to... actually contribute more. You know, when I first went on, I thought, oh, I'll, like, get her coffee and, you know, schedule some appointments, and I'll get to watch, which will be amazing. And then I think that she saw that I could do that. And so she took me under her wing, and by the time that we were in tech, I was able to be more involved in the production. And
bossing people around.
Oh, yeah, I got very bossy. I'm Italian, you know.
Yeah,
so
you seem that. You seem that way. She was very rude in the lobby. I didn't want to bring it up. I'm kidding.
Well, that is very cool that you had that experience. And I see that you said Mariah. It is written as Maria.
Yeah, it's just, you know, she does that
so
lovely English pronunciation of it. No,
it's actually the Burnt Maria Boys. I'm just trying to get that right. It's the Burnt Maria Boys. Yes.
Well, there you go.
No, I called her Maria when I first met her, too. It's fine.
Which begs the question, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
Or Mariah.
Oh, man, that was so... I didn't even hit my own rim.
That's right.
The show that we're talking about here today, among the other ones, is The Burnt Part Boys. It runs Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2. This is from September 14th through October 20th. First preview is tomorrow night. Is that what you said?
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. So they're in the throes of tech right now.
It's so nice to have an audience, huh?
Can't wait. Yeah. Oh,
and
my gosh.
For the tickets, this is at the 3rd Street Theater, which is 8115 West 3rd Street, 8115 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles. For reservations, 323-655-9232. That's 323-655-9232. Or go to www.thirdstreettheater.org.
Also, another good direct way to go is it's on showclicks.com.
Oh, okay.
That's another good way to get the tickets. If you just go, it's show, and then clicks is spelled C-L-I-X.com.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know.
And just search The Burnt Part Boys, and it'll all come up, all the dates, all the tickets. It's great.
Showclicks. Is that a new one? Because it's nice because the only reason I ask it is because I found that if there's one drawback to Plays 411, it's just that there's so much content, it's often difficult to find a show.
Yeah, no, but this one, I mean, I haven't ever bought tickets off of it except for this show now. It's my introduction to it.
How many tickets have you bought off this?
Sorry, guys. Nobody can come anymore.
She actually buys them, and then she hires a crop duster and drops them.
She scalps Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly.
She
ups the price. So actually, I'll just put out my personal cell phone number if anybody wants to.
There you go.
I bought all the tickets.
Clever.
Scalping. She's scalping them.
About putting out. Go ahead.
Definitely stick. We're so glad that you're here, and we want to continue to hear from you. But we also want to hear from the gentleman to my right, who is the next in our interviews today. So I will introduce him,
please,
if that's okay with you, Michael.
Absolutely.
Our next guest spent 3 years in the Broadway national tour of Rent. Off Broadway, he was featured in a new musical titled Serenade. Since moving from New York to Los Angeles, he has become a regular, so to speak, on the rock opera circuit, starring in Shame, a rock opera based on The Scarlet Letter, and Lovelace, a rock opera about the life of porn actress Linda Lovelace. He is also an accomplished musician and recording artist. Please welcome the multi-talented Joe Donahoe. Did I have that right?
That's right.
Wow. And I got to give it to Michael. He had it right
blushing.
There. The Donahue. Oh. He didn't
that's
have
true,
it.
That's true, yes. Bio. I actually haven't heard all that before. I'm a little nervous to have to perform on stage with you.
Oh, you didn't see the billboard as you drove in?
Yeah.
It's all there.
Joe Donahoe billboard.
Right, yeah.
You know, I thought I recognized that face.
You know, you can't help but to. It's pretty famous.
Oh, wow. How modest. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm great.
Thanks for joining us. So how long have you been in L.A.?
I've been in and out of L.A. a bit, so I've been back now for, I guess, 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so, but I lived here before I moved to New York, lived in New York, and before I was on tour, so.
What's your take on the comparisons of the cities? Are you a New Yorker? Are you a Los Angelino?
Or? I'm an Angelino, for
you
sure,
are.
Yeah.
You are. Okay.
New York was too much for me, too much doing an off-Broadway show and having three jobs living in a shoebox, And I kind of, the benefit of being an Angelino is that there is the kind of element of being a big fish in a small pond, you know? So it's just, I get to meet the casting directors from New York just as well, it's kind of a...
Well, you know, things have changed, I think, to what you just said about casting. It's not always, you don't have to absolutely be in New York.
Absolutely not,
to be considered anymore, because they do come out here, and now video is acceptable
in
many cases.
Offered by Breakdown Services, our sponsor.
Right.
That's
right.
Indeed.
Do you know the comedian Patton Oswalt?
I don't.
He has a great bit about living in New York, and because I'm from there, Connecticut, and then lived in New York for a little while. But I love his take on it. He goes, let me tell you what living in New York is like. It turns your skull into a cage, and your brain into a rat. And New York is the stick that pokes the rat.
That sounds
just,
about right.
Because it does get, I tell you, you have to be, like, the thing about Los Angeles is that we all have our bubble, which is the car. And the thing in New York is you are shoulder to shoulder with everyone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't, it affects people.
Well, you know, but that being said, I mean, I think there are many, many redeeming things about New York.
Oh,
yeah,
no, are
New
you
York,
kidding?
Yeah.
I'm the biggest, I love New York.
Yeah,
I would live there in a minute if someone else paid for it.
Right, and if I had a valet and a doorman. And
right, right.
I'll tell you, when I decided I couldn't take it anymore, was I lived in Hell's Kitchen in a shoebox on a fifth floor walk-up.
Literally a Nike box.
And it was literally in a shoebox. But for me to get out one day on a bad rainy day, I had to wait for the foot traffic to pass, and then I had to jump into it.
Yeah.
The right time and get
like a salmon.
Out. Yeah.
You just like jump
exactly.
into the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love New York. I didn't mean to sound disparaging.
I know what you meant to. Yeah. 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 No,
it's what I got to say though. It's one of the reasons I think Chicago is such a great city because it's sort of a hybrid of both.
Mm.
It's got the walking factor that New York has, mm-hmm. but there's a little more breathing space. And then of course the winter comes and that wind comes off the lake and punches you in the face and you realize why.
Oh, that joyful
really
winter,
like
you mean?
Los Angeles.
Shy city, my hometown.
Yes.
Crazy.
But here's the thing, Joe, he wears flip-flops way too much to be a New Yorker. Mm. He's so clearly an Angelino.
Yeah.
True. You wouldn't do that in New York.
No
flip-flops in New York.
But the thing about the massive amounts of people in New York on the streets, to me, that's part of the excitement of New York.
True.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about that.
It's an energy like no other.
Mm-hmm.
A sexual energy, whatever you want to call it. Like no other. But really, seriously. It just people
you're saying New Yorkers put out. That's what you're saying, isn't it, Michael?
No.
No, it is, though. I mean, and I want to be back there at some point, but just on different terms. But, you know, the first time I ever stepped into Times Square at 17 years old, I was just
hooked.
You can feel. Yeah, it's palpable. Right. The energy is just insane. Yeah.
And it's creative, and you're surrounded by all of that art. And
no, it is. It's a great city.
The minds of those people that create that art. So.
The same question we asked your co-star here. Can you tell us about the role that you play in the Burnt Part Boys?
I play the role of Chet, which is a really awesome opportunity for me. I haven't gotten to play a role that really kind of sits with who Joe Donahoe is as well in my theater history. He's just very happy to be where he is, and he's very supportive and loyal with his friends. He kind of plays that role with his best friend, played by Aaron Sheff in the show. He's just very supportive. He's very happy, and I think he kind of stands for what is not wrong about being happy where you are. Not that he doesn't aspire to greater things to any level, but that
he doesn't feel the need to leave. He's satisfied. Was pleased with his life there.
Right. Yeah. And I guess the part that I relate to is less that part about Chet, which I love, but more the part that he's just very laid back, and he's like, hey, this is what it is. We've got to go with that.
So is he sort of a sounding board for the other characters that may not feel the same way?
He's sort of a sounding board for Pickaway, for the town.
Oh,
He's kind of the character within the five of the kids that's saying, this is what it is. This is kind of the only option we have, and make the best of it, and let's have fun, and let's smile as much as possible, because this is what our life is.
This is what we're given.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. This is what we're given, and this is the only choice we have.
It's a good boy.
Yeah.
And this is the West Coast premiere of this, right?
This is, yeah.
Where was the original premiere? The world premiere?
It was off
Vineyard
Broadway
and
at Playwrights Horizons.
Yeah. Jinx.
Buy me a car.
And do you happen to know, and we can also ask Richard this, who's not mic'd, but he can certainly chime in on this, have there been modifications from the original one? Is it just a published piece that was brought here? Because I'm always curious about if there's any sort of workshop process that happens, if it's been tweaked at all. Do either of you know?
There are a couple omissions in the script. Yeah. One of my songs has a verse taken out. A couple.
Right.
So minor tweaks and polishes.
Tweaks.
Right.
You know,
the Off-Broadway production has a recording out, and if you listen to that, there are a few different things about the songs that we noticed once we started listening to the recording, but it is quite similar.
It's always a good sign. It's always a good sign, because in tweaking and polishing, you're always going to have. My friend Ted did Death of a Salesman on Broadway, and Arthur Miller was still alive at the time, and Arthur Miller was changing Death of a Salesman, the great, right up until the opening. So, but I always like to hear that there's little polishes, but no big overhauls.
Yeah.
You looked like you had a
feeling.
No.
I was just thinking about what you were saying, and I was watching Lauren respond to you. And I must say how articulate you are for being so young.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so that's
I agree with that.
That's very kind.
21 and to be that articulate? You're doing something right. Your family did something
right. Like, that was really silly to say. So, like, I just, really, appreciate it.
That was perfect.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
You like
I
that?
Did.
That's all I had. The only other one I could do is...
That's what my mom is thinking right now.
Is your mom listening in?
I think so.
My
probably.
Mom is. Hi, Mom.
Is she?
Hey, Mom.
Yeah. All right.
You've done good, Mom. Joe, you have so many credits on your resume here, and this Shame, a rock opera based on The Scarlet Letter, how fascinating was that?
It was great.
Yeah.
Written by Mark Govner, directed by Janet Rostin. It was...
Janet Rostin, she's terrific.
Right? Yeah. It was a story about... I played Arthur Dimmesdale, and... Just great music, very rocky, really my style.
That was my next question. Given rock and roll and musical theater, you're more of a rock guy?
Yeah, more of a rock guy. Uh-huh. You won't see me in My Fair Lady. You won't see
and
me.
And you don't look, in all due respect, you don't look like a rock guy necessarily.
I can turn it on. I can put on a little eyeliner. Suddenly I'm.
I could see him playing both.
When you first meet him, you don't. That's not what you.
Right. He didn't come in with a safety pin through his lip, but.
I have had a lip ring before. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh.
I have. Yeah.
Have
yeah. I'm that hardcore.
Any tattoos? Any tattoos?
No tattoos.
No tattoos.
No.
Okay.
And my mother's
Lauren,
also not happy.
Lauren,
so.
Any tattoos?
No.
No tattoos.
No.
Richard in the corner there, tattoos?
No.
I still am going to do my tattoo idea, I think, the one I talked to you about.
Which was that?
I want to do a tattoo up my spine of my height at different ages.
Oh.
You know, like a door jam? I just thought that would be really funny.
Classy.
You know, anyone?
Sexy,
anyone?
Sexy
like
turn on.
I
yeah.
get that.
On.
Oh.
Anyone? Sorry.
But yeah. along the lines of my style of singing, I was just thinking about what leads, because the Burnt Part Boys is kind of a hybrid of pop and bluegrass.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So
cool.
It actually sits really nicely, and everyone I think is mm-hmm.
oh,
it's
that
a great,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun to
like
sing.
Pop and bluegrass.
Pop and bluegrass.
It's
that's
so
a pretty
cool.
good way to term it, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, because it does. It's very musical theater. It doesn't lose that. But with the banjo and the instrumentation and just the, there's such tight harmonies. I mean, 5-6-part harmonies when we're all singing together. That
yeah.
kind of thing.
I've never heard anything like it. And so when I heard the music, I was like, I'm going to really work on this audition and I'm going to nail it and I'm going to go get this gig because I knew I wanted to be in it.
No, because that's a style. I mean, the bluegrass is such a distinct style and it's something that you don't see in music.
It's ignored a bit in the
yeah.
music theater world.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Well, how exciting the your show sounds. It really does.
It does.
Yeah.
We think
Burnt
so.
Boys. It's pretty.
And that show, good. As a reminder, is the Burnt Part Boys. And for tickets, Burnt it's thirdstreettheater.org. That's Third Street Theater with the R-E spelling .org. And also you could call 323-655-9232. There is one other theatrical offering in town that we're going to talk to someone on the phone about.
Yes.
That I'm going to call momentarily. But you two stick around because in about 10 minutes we want to ask you about your onstage nightmare of something
man.
Happened
most
in performance.
Embarrassing moment.
But okay. I'm going yes. to call him, Michael, and why don't you give him
yes,
his intro
I
while I dial the electric telephone.
I
here.
Will indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, from the east to the west, he is really seriously one of the most riveting entertainers in live music today. A consummate performer, he has starred on Broadway with Liza Minnelli in Liza's At the Palace and appeared in the Broadway productions of Marilyn, An American Fable, and Street Heat. Here today to talk about his upcoming engagement at the most critically acclaimed Supper Club in Los Angeles, please welcome one and only Mr. Cortez Alexander.
Who are calling right now
Picks
on the fly,
phone.
Which
yes.
is very, very exciting.
Yes, it is. You never
listen.
Know.
Will he
Let's
answer
hope he or will he not?
Hi!
And
yes,
he has answered. Cortez Alexander, you are on the air. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Well, good. We're good. We're sorry that you're not in studio with us today. You were performed locally. Was that at one of your venues, Michael, or was that in a stage play the last time we had Cortez on?
He was actually, probably both, actually. I think he was doing a play at the time and coming up doing a show.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to the... Now, Cortez, have you performed at the Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, or was it Vitello's that you performed at before?
No, it was Sterling's at the Federal, which has now become sort of a home away from home. I love it there, and Michael is absolutely the best host you could ever hope for.
It's a wonderful space, isn't it?
I love it.
Yeah,
I'm loving it. I'm telling all my other performer friends that the talented ones to play there.
How kind of you,
Cortez. The show that you're doing at Sterling's, is it is there a narrative? Is it sort of just a compilation of songs? What's the style?
It is very typical of the way I work. It's a compilation of songs, and then I'll string together the narrative on the fly.
So, which always keeps it fresh and exciting.
Well, if anything, very fast, because at this point it's going to be like a review.
Okay.
Because there's going to be very little chit chat because I don't know what I'm talking about yet.
Is it new stuff? Is it something you've performed before? Is it all new, this compilation?
No, I would say it's 80% new. I think I kept maybe two or three songs just because they're sort of old favorites but for the most part, no, it's almost all new material. We've got a new opening number. We've got the girls have new solos. I've got a new solo. Lots of new stuff.
Oh, who are you?
Speaking of the girls.
Yeah, yeah. Who are you?
He's got the fabulous Melissa Bailey and Julie Garnier.
Oh,
that's
really?
Right. My swell
yes.
girls.
Yeah, the swell girls.
I was actually pretty phenomenal. I was going to perform with Cortez on this, but I had a conflict.
What would that be?
I can't sing. So anyway, good night, everybody.
I was going to say because we really could use a third swell girl.
Cortez, we actually have a track here that I want to share at least a slice of with our listeners here. This is called "It's All Right." This MP3 that we have that we're going to play. Do you want to give it any sort of intro at all?
Sure. This was a song, when I was making my album, I wanted to write a song that was sort of just a feel-good, sort of summery, happy, driving with the top down in your convertible kind of song. And I did, and actually we're gonna be doing an acoustic version of this in my show, so
okay.
I hope you like it.
This is one of the great singing in the car songs. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Okay.
I hope it's great. Okay. I like how it turned out.
Right. Well, let's give it a listen. This is Cortez Alexander, and the song is called "It's All Right."
Didn't think I'd ever laugh again. Now here am I being thought of so highly. And don't it feel good to not be 10? Yeah. Every day is feeling just like summer. Behind the wheel with the radio on. Sing it loud and bring it on, be a hummer. In the spotlight underneath the sun.
Cortez, I wish you could see what was happening in the studio here.
Pants off, people dancing.
People, it's a Bacchanalian fest here. There's like clothes hanging from the ceiling.
Really?
Fan. Yes.
Well, I mean, you've all got to calm down now. It's too hot to get too excited.
Oh, that's wonderful, though. That's wonderful. And it's exactly what you said. It's the great, it's a singing in the car. Or did I say it? The singing in the
he
car.
He said
song.
It, and then you repeated it.
I reiterated
yes,
it.
That's correct.
And you concurred.
I concurred. Right. We're gonna have that play us off the air so people can hear a little more of it. At the end of the show, in about 9 or so minutes, we will play a little more of that.
So Cortez, let's hit upon the very, you know, what really kind of catapulted you into some celebrity there, working with one Miss Liza Minnelli. How did she come about meeting you and hiring you?
When I was in New York in the early 90s, I had a vocal group called The Tonics.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a kind of a big splash in our little pond there. And she came to one of our shows and became a huge champion. We sort of became, I know it sounds so strange to say, but we became really, really good friends. We had the music in common, and then maybe 4 years into the group, she said, "I want to put together a vocal trio to back me up. We'll call it the Cortez Alexander Trio. We'll go around the world. And we'll eat good food, and I'll pay you. How does that sound?" sounds really fun. When do we leave? If you're really serious, I mean, it's like an offer like that is sort of the showbiz lottery. So she was absolutely serious, and I toured with her for 4 years with the trio in the that was in the late 90s. Yeah.
Oh wow!
And then Broadway happened, or was that?
And then Broadway happened. Then I moved to California. After that tour was over, I moved to California, and we didn't see each other for maybe 6 years. I mean, we spoke sporadically, but because of the distance, we didn't see each other. And then one day, this is the craziest thing in the world, I guess it was 5 years ago, I was driving across Santa Monica Boulevard coming from the dentist, and I saw this huge Rolls Royce coming toward me, and I thought, who's driving that big car in the middle of the afternoon? And it was Liza behind the wheel. And I couldn't believe it. And I did a U-turn right in the middle. She's about to make a left on Rodeo Drive, and I'm honking at her now. And she sees me through the rearview mirror, and I see her arms start waving and pointing, and so I followed her to the, the Rodeo Collection, that part of Wilshire Rodeo that looks like Main Street USA?
Right.
We parked in the underground parking there, and walked up and down Rodeo Drive like no time had passed, and just talking about this one show, and, you know, who's having an affair with this one, and to hear about that, and, you know, all this crazy nonsense catching up. And she said, you know, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm starting my CD, and, you know, just living out here in California and just going day to day." And And I said, what about you? Are you still doing your concert? And she says, yes, but I want to do a new show. And I said, oh, great. And what is it? And she says, I want to do Kay Thompson. And now Kay Thompson was her godmother who lived with Liza the last few years of her life. And she was also the vocal director at MGM and a real force to be reckoned with, an amazing woman. And I had the great pleasure of knowing her toward the end of her life. And she said, I want to do a big portion of her club act. She had a nightclub act with the Williams brothers. Andy Williams and his brothers sang with her. And I said, well, that sounds great. Who do you have? And she told me the other guy. She had Billy Stritch and Jim Caruso. And she said, I'd love for you to be in this with me since you knew Kay, and she loved you so much. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I mean, really? We're going to go out and do this again? And it wasn't even anything I tried to pursue. It was just another crazy thing that just sort of happened to me. And I said, I would absolutely love to do it, not just for you, but for Kay too.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
So what we did was we did it in the beginning very, very light. Like the first concept of it was to be just sort of us in, you know, beautiful amber gels in suits singing this music. But we ended up with a choreographer, Ron Lewis, who directed it also, and we just ended up dancing our asses off, and it was like a 40-minute sprint.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And we went, it was incredible. And from the minute we hit the stage, we didn't stop. And wow, we toured all around the world with it, and we ended up at the Palace and winning the Tony Award for Best Special Event, which was probably one of my career highlights.
That's incredible. Well, speaking of special events, we want to talk about your special event and actually give the information out where people can see it. This is Cortez Alexander. It's the Other Swell Show. It's Monday, September 9th. Featuring the Swell Girls, Melissa Bailey and Julie Garnier. It is a special event at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. That, of course, is 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood's trendy NoHo Arts District. 6:30 to 7 is the dinner seating. 8 p.m. is the performance. 4 tickets and reservations are a must always at Sterling's Upstairs because they always sell out. It's 818-754-8700. That's 818-754-8700. Cortez, I'm sorry we have to go, but thank you so much for coming on the air with us, and always a pleasure to talk to you. Look
forward
to
it. Absolutely.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. And come down to Federal. The food, I'm telling you, is so good, you won't believe it.
Macaroni and cheese bites with bacon. That's all I'm saying. Macaroni and cheese bites with bacon. There you go.
I like the corn chowder. Corn chowder and song. Perfect night out.
Corn chowder and song. Thank you, Cortez.
Thank you, buddy.
All righty. Talk to you guys soon.
All right.
What a nice guy.
Very nice.
All right, folks. We got 4.5 minutes left. I want to hear your tales of woe.
Lauren's ready. She's excited.
Lauren, you got something in the hopper?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to tell this story. All right. So the first show that I ever did professionally was The Christmas Carol at Goodman Theater in Chicago, my hometown. And I was 12. And during the
school board, it's an institution in Chicago, the Goodman's Christmas Carol.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yearly. I've done it twice.
Oh, okay.
And the first time I was one of the, you know, Belinda Cratchit, one of the Cratchit kids, but we also do the schoolboy scene. And I had to dress up as a little boy. And the Goodman has this huge school gate that flies down from their fly space. And it hangs about an inch off the floor. So, of course, they tell us, don't trip on it. You got to jump over it. Don't trip. So, of course, I'm going to trip on it. And I was exiting stage, tripped on it, just total face plant, complete face plant. And on top of it, my schoolboy hat fell off so everybody could see I was a girl. And there's like 2-3 rows of students in the front row that all decided to laugh uproariously at me. So I got really scared and I ran off stage. But that's not all. Realized that I had left my hat on the stage and thought it was a good idea to run back on stage, my hat, and run back off while crying. I'm really embarrassed and sad.
Because it wouldn't be distracting enough.
No, because the scene didn't continue. No, the scene is going on. I'm going to run back on and grab my hat. That was my smart 12-year-old decision making.
Amazing.
So that was a little embarrassing.
Joe, what do you have for us?
Oh, gosh. I've tripped and fallen so many times, but I guess the best version I have is I did Six Flags.
I thought you were going to say your favorite story is when you tripped a 12-year-old backstage
at the Goodman. Yes. No.
But, Joe Donahoe!
The best story I have is I did Six Flags, which was 5 shows a day, 6 days a week. Oh. So there's so many things that go wrong, but yeah. We had these huge Broadway panels that we pushed off stage, and I slammed a dear friend's finger between the proscenium.
What's a Broadway panel?
I mean, it was just said Broadway, and it was these huge moving carts that you moved off. I'm acting it out here in the studio, which you can't see. I just
it's really good.
And I slammed her finger between the proscenium and one of these huge carts.
Oh.
And then my microphone came on for the Footloose solo, and I was saying, "Stop the show! Stop the show! Someone help!" And it was just booming through the audience. I take after my mom when it comes to panic, so they didn't do very well.
Oh, man.
It was embarrassing. Oh, huge audience.
Ouch. I'm so humiliating. Flinching over the finger thing.
Yeah, I know, right?
It was bad.
Well, one more time, ladies and gentlemen, to go see these talented people in one of the most exciting shows that's opening in town here coming up, the Burt Park Boys. West Coast premiere at the 3rd Street Theater in the West Hollywood adjacent area. And it's coming up in preview September 7th through the 13th. Performances September 14th through October 20th. And the the 3rd Street Theater is easily located on 3rd Street, obviously, 8115 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles.
And Cortez Alexander is at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal for tickets, 818-754-8700, and that performance is Monday, September 9th. Call early and call often because it will sell out. And we're going to listen to a little more of Cortez Alexander to play us off the air. But what a pleasure having both of you on.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Lauren.
It was just great.
Thank you,
thank you for having us.
And Michael, as always, a pleasure to share the microphone with
Indeed.
You. And a little more of Cortez as we say goodbye.
It's all right. It's true. Yeah. It's all right. Everything's come together now that I'm with you.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.